Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm your host, Lydia Johnson. This week, we're bringing you a special edition of the show from the Minnesota Farm Fest. We'll have conversations with ranking members of both the House and Senate Agriculture Committees. Thousands of ag industry leaders were gathered in Southwest Minnesota for educational sessions, policy discussions, and to see the latest ag innovations this week. For those in rural America, there was much curiosity about benefits to farm country and President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill. Prospects for a skinny farm bill this fall, and the second Make America Healthy Again Commission report due out next week. To begin, USDA recently announced a broad reorganization plan that would move over half the department's Washington-based staff outside of the Beltway. We asked Senator Amy Klobuchar, the ranking member on the Senate Ag Committee, if she was reassured about the relocation plan after the committee's recent hearing, and USDA Deputy Secretary Stephen Vaden's comments at Minnesota Farm Fest.
I'm really concerned about what's going on. You know, we are down 15,000 employees and we're down 1,600 researchers because of terminations or because of early buyouts and the like. And I just don't think that's good for rural America. So I start from that basis. And you look at the tariffs and all the inconsistencies in drying up markets, all of this is not good for rural. And then you look at what the farmers are dealing with anyway, which is, of course, input costs, weather, things that they can't control. And one thing we want to make sure is the USDA has their backs. So this reorg plan would move half of the employees into states that are not in Minnesota. In fact, they are not even in the upper Midwest. So you'd have people moving to Utah, which is number 37 for ag in the country. To Indiana, Missouri, North Carolina, nowhere near us, yet they're not in the room where it happens. But I really want to get a farm bill done, and this is what I want to do. Number one, making sure that the loan limit increases for our farmers. It's been set years and years ago, and costs have gone way up. Senator Hovind and I have a legislation to take that from $2 million to $2.6 million for ownership loans, and also operating loans would go up as well. We've got to do more on allowing for grazing on CRP lands. Senator Thune and I have that bill. We can do more on ARC and reference prices. And that's something that we could do in a farm bill that was harder to do some of this in the budget bill. And then finally, we've just got to have so many needs in rural America with housing, childcare, those kinds of things. So I'd love to get a farm bill done. I am the happy warrior in terms of working with my Republican counterpart, Bozeman, and I look at this and say, okay, does this stuff help Minnesota or doesn't it? I'll work with them when it does, like confirm Luke Lindbergh, our neighbor in South Dakota, for the trade rep. I was a big supporter of his. I will, under the USDA, supported the secretary. I try very hard to be positive when I can, because we've got to unite when it comes to rural. But when they do stuff that hurts our state or hurts rural, I'm going to stand up and call them out and try to make it better.
And you mentioned many of those farm bill elements were included in reconciliation, but House Ag Committee Chair G.T. Thompson says he still wants to move that skinny farm bill with those remaining elements you began mentioning this fall. Do you think that there could be a restoration of cuts, specifically nutrition cuts, in a skinny farm bill? Will you be pushing for that?
Well, that would certainly be good. I find it hard to believe that they will agree to restore all of them, but even some of them. That was a crazy deal. They ended up, to get the vote of the senator from Alaska, rewarded 10 states at this moment that have the highest error rate. And none of them were in the Midwest. So we're going to have this huge cost shift of $85 million a year on SNAP. But other states like New York that should be paying $1.2 billion a year will have no shift because they have a high error rate. They mess up more. That's pretty crazy. But that was the way they got Alaska and the vote of the senator from Alaska. So that's just one example of how slapped together this half-baked plan was. It also is going to hurt our local grocery stores. And at a time when grocery prices are high because of these tariff policies and inflation, this is the last time you want to be hurting, particularly in rural America, veterans, people with disabilities, families, and seniors. And so, you know, my hope is we could revisit some of that as well. But I'm not naive enough to think we're going to change all of it.
And you mentioned being optimistic about, you know, working with Senator Bozeman, collaborating to push the skinny farm bill. Do you think that your other Democratic colleagues will follow in suit with your example on that and negotiate after these cuts?
I hope so, especially if we're able to restore some of the SNAP funding, because we've always done rural work on a bipartisan basis. That was one of the reasons I got on the Ag Committee to begin with, and it's such an important part of Minnesota. We're the sixth biggest ag state in the country, the fourth biggest for ag exports. We are number one for sugar beets. We are number one when it comes to turkeys. I always love saying that in Washington. And so we have a lot of stake in this working.
We'll be back with more from House Ag Committee Ranking Member Angie Craig right after this.
These are the farmers and ranchers who helped build the America we depend on. And Farm Credit is here for them, supporting rural communities and agriculture with reliable, consistent credit and financial services. In good times and bad, we provide loans to farmers and ranchers, farmer-owned cooperatives, rural homebuyers, agribusinesses, and rural infrastructure providers. We help agricultural producers feed the world. Learn more today.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you
yes.
asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources.
This
is my sustainability story.
Welcome back. House Ag Committee Chairman G.T. Thompson says he's planning to take action on a skinny farm bill this fall. We asked House Ag Committee Ranking Member Angie Craig if that goal is attainable.
Well, we're in the beginning process of that discussion. Chairman Thompson and I met before I left Washington, and we had a conversation about the fact that I need to talk to my committee members about what their priorities would be in a skinny farm bill. Obviously, I wish we had done a full 12-title, five-year farm bill instead of doing part of this in reconciliation. But there was a lot undone. We need to reauthorize CRP, rural broadband, some of the farm credit programs.
Budget reconciliation included some cuts to nutrition spending. You know, do you think there will be a restoration of some of those cuts in the skinny farm bill?
Well, look, we're in the very early stage of talking about what we would like to see in the skinny farm bill. I think when you cut $168 billion from the farm bill, it certainly makes it, when you cut $168 billion from the nutrition title of the farm bill, it makes it harder to get, full Democratic support for a skinny farm bill down the road. I've made that clear. But I also want to make sure that we're at the table, that we're working to see what we can do to move forward here.
And, you mentioned meeting with Chairman Thompson already, but will you and your Democratic colleagues be willing to negotiate on a skinny farm bill, after those cuts? Heard you say that the coalition's frayed. Do you think it's really frayed at this point?
Well, the coalition normally gets 150 Democrats to vote for a 12-title, five-year farm bill. I don't think that's possible. Is it possible to get it over the finish line? We're going to have those conversations to see what exactly is going to be in it. So I think what's in the skinny farm bill, how it's paid for, is going to guide whether or not we're able to get it across the finish line.
And the House Ag Committee had a hearing right before we left for recess regarding Proposition 12. During that hearing and hearing the comments from your fellow committee members, where do you think that lies in these farm bill discussions?
Well, it is untenable for us to continue with 50 states having 50 different laws. In this country. I personally think the Supreme Court, it was an interstate commerce issue and that they should have dealt with it, but they didn't. So I'm looking for how we can resolve the issue. You've got a lot of people who have already invested in becoming Prop 12 compliant. So whatever we come up with, I think it needs to be bipartisan and it needs to not punish the people who have made those investments already.
And the USDA recently released a reorganization plan, and Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins has referred to that plan as 95% baked already. The public comment period still has weeks remaining there. I'm curious, what are your thoughts on the plan and the administration's steps to both create that plan and communicate it?
Well, it was egregious that the administration didn't notify or work with Congress at all, and apparently they didn't talk to family farmers either when they did it. I fear that USDA is making some of the same mistakes they made in my first term in Congress in 2019, where they proposed to move those jobs out of the District of Columbia. And what ended up happening, in fact, is that the agency became much, much less productive. And I think in their plan, I mean, you heard the five regional cities, nowhere in the Midwest. So, you know, all of Minnesota or Iowa or Illinois, I mean, frankly, I'm annoyed that they didn't even consider our input. And so I've asked the chairman to call a hearing with USDA on their reorganization plans. I think you're going to see, like we saw in 2019, a lot of the people who have the experience are not going to be willing to relocate. That's what happened the first time. 75% said no, thank you. And so 90% of those jobs are already outside the Beltway in the district. And so, I mean, I'm not sure what they're thinking, but again, it feels a lot more chaotic than it needs to feel.
We'll be back with more from American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall right after this.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back. The second Make America Healthy Again Commission report is due out next week. We asked American Farm Bureau Federation President Zippy Duvall about the group's priorities in the report and how the report could be different from the first edition.
Well, the process has been different, definitely, because we made our voice heard very loudly that we were disappointed that farmers weren't at the table. Of course, the Secretary of Agriculture was there, and Mr. Zeldin, the administrative EPA, was there defending agriculture in it, but we needed farmers at the table, and the process this time has involved us. We've had farmer groups, Farm Bureau group. I took five farmers myself from all across the country to sit down and talk to them, and we've been communicating back and forth between our office and the people that's responsible for writing this next report. And we feel like we hope we've made a difference.
And you mentioned you took many of your state presidents to meet with Callie Means, with Ag Secretary Brooke Rollins, Administrator Zeldin. You know, I'm curious, in that meeting, how did the tone change? And, you know, what was that meeting like? And how do you think that those comments will be different moving forward?
Well, it was very open. And we went from a stage in the first report of being supportive of agriculture, but also criticizing some of the things that we did, and to how do we take this MAHA movement and join it with agriculture to help agriculture move forward, especially in trying to keep small, medium-sized farms in business. So hopefully we'll see some of that rise in this next report, and hopefully it'll be more farmer-friendly as far as the crop protection tools that we have to use on our farms to be able to produce food and fiber for this country.
And you mentioned those crop protection tools. RFK Jr. has been specifically critical of those and seed oils. I mean, do you trust that he will, you know, go lighter on those in this second report?
Well, trust, it goes a long way, you know, but we've been been able to communicate with him more, so it makes us feel a little bit better about it. We feel like we're in a good place. We feel like we've made a difference, but we really won't know that until we see what the report says.
And you mentioned some of those precision agriculture technologies as well. Senator Roger Marshall held a MAHA roundtable on Capitol Hill recently, and mm-hmm. You know, that was a big focus, was those precision ag tools and working together for soil health and MAHA. So, you know, I'm curious, within your recommendation list, to elaborate a bit more on the precision ag priorities within that.
Yeah, they're important. And people, if they understand the science behind those precision ag tools that we use, then once they understand the science, then they have more understanding, more trust in the system of allowing us to use it. So, you know, not only with the MAHA committee, but I've also had the opportunity to express that to the president.
And turning gears, President Trump's One Big Beautiful Bill Act was signed into law around the 4th of July. You know, I'm curious, you know, what are you hearing producers looking forward to most in that bill? There's many very important provisions for farm country.
Yeah, well, you know, the first thing that really happened was we modernized the reference prices, which needed to be done because, you know, the crop we've got in the ground today is the most expensive crop we've ever had in the ground. And those reference prices weren't at a level to be helpful to us. So that was fixed. And then, of course, the tax bill part of the big One Big Beautiful Bill is a huge thing for farmers and ranchers and small businesses across this country.
I'm curious, here at Farm Fest, lots of sessions regarding, you know, the future of sustainable ag and the boost to the farm safety net and everything in between. But from your perspective, you know, what are you hearing from producers here on the ground in Minnesota? What are their biggest concerns as we finish the summer and move into the fall?
Well, you know, their attention is beginning to turn toward harvest and what the weather might do to them as they try to harvest their crops. And then, of course, you know, what's that crop going to be worth? What value is it going to have? And then the next step is I got to go back to my banker and get an operating loan plant next year's crop. And that's exactly what I told the president. The economics in farmland is very, very bad. Commodity prices are bad. And it's going to be very difficult if he don't pull off some of these trade treaties and being able to level the playing field and us be able to move our products. It's going to be very difficult for our farmers moving into the future and getting operating loans and being able to keep the farm sustainable.
We'll be back with more from Congressman Brad Finstad right after this.
I think some of sustainability to farmers just comes second nature. If you asked a farmer, are you sustainable, they'd probably look at you maybe a little funny and say, I don't think I'm doing anything that special, but it really is just what they do. We're all farmers, and our goal is taking the best care of our land, our cattle, our natural resources. This
is my sustainability story.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back. Optimism is building to make progress on a skinny farm bill this fall. We asked Minnesota Congressman Brad Finstad about his priorities in the skinny farm bill.
First, I'm very thankful that we were able to get a big portion of some of the really sticky issues done in reconciliation, but it's important that we don't lose momentum. And so if you look at the Prop 12 fix, that's really important to me. I have counties where I represent more pigs than people. In southern Minnesota, we're a pork powerhouse, and we have to make sure that political science from California doesn't dictate the terms on our farms in Minnesota. So Prop 12 is an important one. Reforming the way the USDA and the FSA loan program works in regards to the PACE Act, expanding or increasing the loan limit sizes, you know, to keep up with really the reality of today. Some of those programs and the levels were established when maybe it was $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 an acre for land and our inputs were maybe a lot lower. Fast forward to today, you know, the dynamics have changed and we have to make sure the program changes with it. And then just the, you know, overall kind of, what's the next phase of conservation funding look like? What's CRP 2.0 look like? I think that would be a great place in the skinny farm bill for us to have that conversation, making sure that the highest CRP contracts are going to the most vulnerable land. And maybe we take a little bit less of a CRP contract for the most productive, highly quality land in this country, so we're not competing with our own federal government when it comes to land rent prices.
And I'm curious, you began to mention that fix for Proposition 12. I heard you speak at that hearing a few weeks ago before you went to recess. After those comments, after hearing the witness panel, you know, how optimistic are you that could be included in and that many of your Democratic colleagues that spoke against it during that hearing will be supportive of it in that skinny farm bill?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was made loud and clear that it has to happen. I honestly believe Prop 12 will be one of the most devastating things for middle and small hog farmers in our country. I think it'll do more for consolidation than anything we've ever seen in the industry. And so if we don't fix it, shame on all of us. And so I think there's gonna be a lot of us that will put line in the sand and say, listen, we're not gonna move this skinny farm bill forward unless this is a part of the fix. So if there's some anxiety on the other side of the aisle in regards to what our fix looks like today, I welcome them to the table. What can we do to get you on board? That's my question and my ask to them.
President Trump's tariff policy have generated $30 billion in revenue just last month alone. I'm curious, there's some exemptions, but ag is still waiting for some of the deal-making with specific trading partners. Is farm country, initially was very concerned about a potential trade war. Are they right to be concerned about a trade war? What do you see as an outlook looking forward in the trade space?
Well, I would say that, the old threat of a trade war doesn't necessarily seem to be playing out. I know it was good political rhetoric, and I know everyone is loving to run on political emotions right now, but it's not reality. When you look at, just the trade deals in the last few weeks, historic trade deals, I mean, if we have an opportunity to send $750 billion worth of ethanol to the UK, that's a huge opportunity for farmers right here down the road. We will see that in the market. And by the way, farmers want the market, not a mailbox check. We don't want to farm for some subsidized government program. We want to farm for a pure good market price. These trade deals will allow us to do that. For right or for wrong, the last 20-some years, we kind of became complacent and content with our head in the sand, saying China's just going to consume everything because there's so many, so much demand there. Well, that's great until it's not. And so I think this is also an opportunity for us just to diversify trade partners, create more opportunities, more people wanting to buy the products that we grow. We will see that in the price, and these trade deals are starting to happen. It's been 6 months, yes, of some uncertainty and unknowing of what the economic lever of tariffs really is going to do, but we will start to hopefully see these things settle out, and God willing, we start to see them in the price.
We'll be back with more from Congresswoman Michelle Fischbach right after this.
Trial lawyers are using a discredited report from a World Health Organization subagency to attack a safe, American-made weed-fighting tool. This critical tool helps keep your food costs down, and without it, food inflation could double. Stand with American farmers and keep trial lawyers' greed out of our farms and food supply. Fight back. Call your local representative.
Clean Fuels Alliance America is leading the way toward cleaner air, stronger local economies, and reduced dependence on fossil fuels. The industry uses more than 1 billion pounds of soybean oil every month to produce clean fuels. Biodiesel, renewable diesel, and sustainable aviation fuel deliver immediate reductions in greenhouse gas emissions in heavy-duty transportation industries. We're growing better, cleaner fuels for today and tomorrow.
Welcome back. Dozens of U.S. trading partners were stung with higher tariffs after President Trump's August 1st negotiating deadline passed. We asked Minnesota Congresswoman Michelle Fischbach for her thoughts on the president's tariff negotiations so far.
He is bringing people to the table, and that's an incredible feat. For 4 years, we didn't have much going on with trade, and now we have people at the table. And I think that the deputy secretary mentioned, in addition to that, that we are talking ag. Ag is at the forefront of those negotiations, and so we are trying to open those markets. I think he mentioned Japan now taking U.S. rice. And with the U.K., we opened up beef, and we both opened up ethanol. And so The ag issue is at the forefront of those negotiations. And so I think the president is using the tariffs to bring those people to the table. I mean, numerous countries are writing those letters to make sure that they are at the table.
And you mentioned many of those countries coming to the table, but the administration has mentioned some tariff exemption lists, which are critical for many ag and food products. Given your ag heavy district, what tariff exemptions are you specifically pushing for?
Well, we'll continue to. In addition to the ag that we're looking at, there's some manufacturing, but we'll continue to push those and work with the administration to make sure that we are meeting the needs.
Have you been given, kind of a indication of how those tariff exemption lists are being assembled, or for each country, each trading partner?
I will say, I think they're part of the negotiations. I think, number one, they're part of the negotiations. But in addition to that, our trade subcommittee continues to look at those too and encourage whatever we can do to make sure that we're meeting the needs of the ag community.
And economists have predicted that farm country will begin feeling the effects of those tariff policies come harvest time. Do you agree with that? And is farm country still justified to be worried about a potential trade war?
Well, I think what we're taking a look at, and we were talking a little bit about it earlier, about if there is a need. In 2017, they came through with aid for those farmers that were struggling with the tariff issues. I'm hoping that it doesn't get to that. I hope certainly that we are able to deal with that well before that issue. But, we will continue to monitor, and I think that's, and hearing from farmers, hearing the effects of it, And continuing that conversation and continuing those to pursue those is an important part of the whole negotiation process.
And we're at Minnesota Farm Fest. Are you hearing concerns from farmers about trade, about tariffs? What are the biggest concerns that you're hearing from your constituents this week here at the farm show?
You know, we do hear about the low prices. Nothing necessarily that we can always do about that. But I think what we are hearing about, too, is the wins that we did have in that in the reconciliation package with those taxes. We had heard a lot about that over the years, the reference prices, the information, or the provisions in that were included from the Farm Bill.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. We'll be back in Washington next week with a special edition of the show, diving into the details of the new Make America Healthy Again Commission Report. For AgriPulse, I'm Lydia Johnson. Thanks for watching.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more. For agriculture, trade, food, environment, and regulatory news, your source is AgriPulse.com.